and factions.
Then followed the siege of Jerusalem, which was ended when the angel of the Lord killed 185,000 Assyrian soldiers in one night, and Sennacherib gave up the siege and fled back to his own land. In confirmation of this, Sennacherib's own record of this says, "I then besieged Hezekiah of Judah, who had not submitted to my yoke, and I captured 46 of his strong cities and fortresses, and innumerable small cities which were round about them, with the battering of rams, and the assault of engines, and the attack of foot soldiers, and by mines and breaches made in the wall. I brought out therefrom 200,150 people, both small and great. Hezekiah himself, like a caged bird, I shut up within Jerusalem, his royal city." Ancient kings were boastful of their victories, but never of their defeats. So King Sennacherib tactfully fails to state how the siege of Jerusalem ended. But he does confirm the capture of all the other cities of Judah and the deportation therefrom of 200,150 people. Remember that all the people of the 10 northern tribes were already settled around the south end of the Caspian Sea in the Assyrian deportation of Israel. Now to them was added a large portion of the 2 southern tribes of Benjamin and Judah, so that the Assyrian deportation included all of the 10 tribes and a substantial representation from the other 2. These were the people who became your ancestors and mine when they moved into Europe. Over the years, the increasing numbers of the Israelite tribes expanded northward along both sides of the Caspian Sea. They were not basically city builders, but farmers and herdsmen. Probably in the early part of their stay there, the Assyrians sternly discouraged the building of cities, which would naturally be fortified centers of resistance. As they were moving into this area, herded along as prisoners, robbed of all their belongings, they had to make themselves brush shelters or booths where they stopped for any length of time. Here in the southwest, our Indians call such a brush shelter a wickiup. The Hebrews called it a sukkah, applying the name also to a tent. It was the only house a nomad owned. The plural of sukkah was sukkah. Gradually, this was slurred over into skuth, and used of a tent dweller or nomad. And finally, among the Greeks, this was slurred over into Scyth and Scythian. The great carving on the Behistun rock made about 516 BC carried inscriptions showing the many different nations who were tributary to King Darius I of Persia. These inscriptions were written in Old Persian, in Median, and in Assyrian. They showed that among these were a Scythian nation, called in Assyrian and Babylonian, Gimri, the name meaning the tribes. From Gimri was derived the name of the Kimmerians, who settled somewhat to the north and into the Ukraine. But the Behistun inscriptions also stated that these people were called Sakka in Persian and Median. So already, the later names are beginning to evolve. The great Greek historian Herodotus, who lived from 484 to 425 BC, and who was generally called the father of history, speaking of these people, says, "The Sakai, or Scyths, were clad in trousers, and had on their heads tall, stiff caps rising to a point. They bore the bow of their country, and the dagger, besides which they carried the battle axe, or sagaris. They were in truth Energian Scythians, but the Persians called them Sakai, since that is the name which they give to all Scythians." Incidentally, some of the magnificent carved walls of the ancient ruins of the Persian palace at Persepolis show illustrations of those Sakai in their trousers and pointed caps, bringing tribute to the Persian king. We are now getting further clues to these people. Herodotus says that the Scythians, or Sakai, first appeared in that land in the 7th century B.C., which is the very same period in which the tribes of Israel were settled there by their Assyrian conquest. Their use of the battle axe as a weapon is a carryover from their history as Israel. In Jeremiah 51, verse 20, God says of Israel, "Thou art my battle axe and weapons of war, for with thee will I break in pieces the nations, and with thee will I destroy kingdoms." We will see later that the name evolved from Sake to Saxon, and it is noteworthy that the battle axe was the great weapon of the Saxons. These Scythians, or Sake, lived up to God's description of Israel as his battle axe and weapons of war. They became a military people of great power who did much to break up ancient nations. The Greek geographer and historian Strabo, who lived between 63 BC and about 21 AD, says, "Most of the Scythians, beginning from the Caspian Sea, are called Dahae Scythae, and those situated more toward the east, Massagetae and Sakae. The rest have the common name of Scythians, but each tribe has its own peculiar name. The Sakae had made incursions similar to those of the Cimmerians and Phrygians, some near their own country, others at a greater distance. They occupied Bactriana and got possession of the most fertile tract in Armenia, which was called after their own name, Sakasini. They advanced even as far as the Cappadocians, those particularly situated near the Euxine Sea, which today we call the Black Sea, who are now called the Pontici. This was but the early part of their expansion, however. When a century had elapsed since their deportation to this land of Scythia, they had grown strong enough to begin the long series of harassing wars against their conquerors, the Assyrians. They lacked the strength to capture the powerfully fortified group of cities around the Assyrian capital, and in turn, their nomadic habits made it easy for them to retreat before a too powerful Assyrian army. But generations of this constant warfare wore down the Assyrians and bled them white, so that when the Medes finally overran Assyria and captured Nineveh in 612 BC, their victory was a fairly easy one against the exhausted Assyrians. From this point on, I could refer you to just one historical book which alone fully traces the Scythians on to their settlement in England as the Anglo-Saxons. A History of the Anglo-Saxons by Sharon Turner does a magnificent job of this. As most of you know, I am a lawyer by profession, and a lawyer soon learns to distinguish between the man who actually knows the facts and the man who is merely repeating hearsay, that is, gossip and rumor he has heard from others. But how do we know whether these others actually knew what they were talking about? Unless a man has seen the occurrence with his own eyes, his ideas on the subject are no better than the accuracy of the information he has received. Now, no historian living in our times can have any personal knowledge of what happened 2,000 years ago, so his writings can be no better than the source material he has obtained from people who lived and wrote at a time when accurate information could still be had. Most modern history books are based on rather scanty documentation from early sources, so it is so much easier for one historian to copy from another. But Sharon Turner's History of the Anglo-Saxons is one of the most thoroughly documented historical studies ever produced, and its reliability is beyond question. He traces the Anglo-Saxons of Britain back to the Scythians. Unfortunately, he doesn't go the one step further and trace the Scythians back to Israel, but we can do that from other sources. But let us go back to the Scythians, as the people of Israel became known, in the land to which they were deported. Diodorus Siculus, a Greek historian who lived in the times of Julius and Augustus Caesar, says this: "The Scythians anciently enjoyed but a small tract of ground, but through their valor, growing stronger by degrees, they enlarged their dominion far and near, and attained at last to a vast and glorious empire. At the first, a very few of them, and those very despicable for their mean origin, seated themselves near to the river Araxes. Afterward, one of their ancient kings, who was a warlike prince and skillful in arms, gained to their country all the mountainous parts as far as to Mount Caucasus. Sometime afterward, their posterity, becoming famous and eminent for valor and martial affairs, subdued many territories. Then, turning their arms the other way, they led their forces as far as to the river Nile in Egypt. Other historians record that blonde Scythians made an expedition against Palestine and Egypt about 626 B.C. The town of Scythopolis in the Jordan Valley is named for a settlement which they made on this raid. But to continue with Diodorus Siculus, he says, this nation prospered more and more and had kings that were very famous, from whom the Sakas and the Massagetae and the Arimaspians and many others called by other names derived their origin. Amongst others, there were two remarkable colonies that were drawn out of the conquered nations by those kings. The one they brought out of Assyria and settled in the country lying between Paphlagonia and Pontus. The other out of Media, which they placed near the river Tanais, which people are called Sauromatians. Note how God's destiny for these people worked. They would not leave behind any pockets of their people in the lands where their conquerors had settled them. But when they had gained great power, they came back and picked up any who remained, taking them on into the migrating mass. Likewise, history records that after the overthrow of Babylon by the Medes and Persians, the Scythians raided it, carrying off with them such of the people of Judah and Benjamin as were not going back to Jerusalem. Even in early times, before the final mass movement into Europe, the Scythians had already begun their march to their new homelands, where some of them had already arrived before the beginning of the Christian era. Pliny the Elder, a Roman historian who lived from 23 to 79 A.D., says this: the name Scythian has extended in every direction, even to the Sarmatae and the Germans. But this ancient name now is given only to those who dwell beyond those nations and live unknown to nearly all the rest of the world. Beyond the Danube are the peoples of Scythia. The Persians have called them by the general name of Sakae, which properly belongs only to the nearest nation of them. The more ancient writers give them the name of Arameans. The multitude of these Scythians is quite innumerable. In their life and their habits, they much resemble the people of Parthia, Persia as we would say today. The tribes among them that are better known are the Sakae, the Massagetae, the Dehai, etc. Others have noted this early migration into Germany. For example, Herodotus mentions a migration and settlement of a people he calls the Sigynoi, who themselves claimed to be colonists from Media, and who migrated as far as the river Rhine in northern Europe. Remember that among the places the Israelites were resettled by the Assyrians were the cities of the Medes, and these people themselves said they had come from Media. Also note that Pliny the Elder said that the more ancient writers give them the name of Aramea, that is, Aramean. In modern language, we would say Syrian. In Deuteronomy 26, verse 5, every Israelite was commanded to confess that a Syrian, ready to perish, was my father, and he went down into Egypt and sojourned there with a few, and became a nation great, mighty, and populous. Hence, these ancient writers could correctly identify the Israelite Scythians as Arameans, for they had come from a land which was part of Greater Syria. Among the tribe of the Scythians, the Massagetae attracted the notice of all the ancient historians by their numbers and their warlike ability. Those who described them in more detail divided them into the Massagetae and the Physagetae. The Getae part of the name soon evolved into Goth. The Massagetae were the greater Goths, and the Physagetae were the lesser Goths. Thus, we already find among the Scythians names we can identify as the people who later conducted the great migrations into Europe. The Goths, as we know, were later called Ostrogoths, meaning East Goths, and Visigoths, which means West Goths. But to go back a few centuries, the Sakae were allies of the Medes and Persians in the attack upon Babylon in 536 B.C. Remember that God had said that Israel was my battle axe and weapons of war. For with thee will I break in pieces the nations, and with thee will I destroy kingdoms. So God had used Scythian Israel to maintain constant war against Assyria for nearly a century, until Assyria was too weakened to resist the Medes and Persians. Then God used Scythian Israel, the sacking, to help in the conquest of Babylon when its time had come. Later, King Cyrus of Persia was foolish enough to try to conquer his former allies, the Sakai, but he was killed in the battle. King Darius also tried to conquer them, but they being a nomadic people, they retreated before his massive armies until he gave up and retired. Professor George Rawlinson says that the original development of the Indo-European language took place in Armenia, which, you will remember, was at that time occupied by Scythian Israel. Certainly, from these people, we can trace the introduction of this language into Europe. This powerful and increasingly numerous people thereafter spread further north, both east and west of the Caspian Sea. To the west of it, they penetrated into the Volga and Don River valleys as the Sauromatians and the Royal Scyths, nomadic peoples. To reach these lands, they had come up through the Caucasus Mountains by a great pass, which is today occupied by the Georgian Military Road. Perhaps the communists have changed the name of this pass in recent years, but from ancient times until within our own lifetime, this pass was known as the Pass of Israel. The white race of Europe is often called Caucasian because the ancestors of many of them did thus come out of the Caucasus Mountains. When Alexander the Great began his great marauding expedition across Western Asia and as far as India, he had to skirt the edge of the lands held by the Scythians. In his limitless vanity and ambition, he wanted also to conquer them, but it is recorded that their ambassadors said they would never surrender to him, that they were nomadic peoples who, if they couldn't resist, could retreat indefinitely before his armies, and they had no wealthy cities for him to occupy and loot. Alexander invaded their lands long enough to fight one severe battle with them, defeating the Scythian forces he met. But this was evidently just as a lesson to them not to attack the flanks of his forces, for he led his forces out of their territory and never returned to the attack. Remember that Israel is God's battle axe and weapons of war. They had already weakened Assyria, and as allies of the Medes and Persians, had helped to overthrow Assyria and Babylon. They had beaten off attempts of the Persians to conquer them. In the article entitled Scythians, Chambers' Encyclopedia of 1927 records that the Scythians, after about 128 BC, overran Persia, routed several Persian armies, and levied tribute from the Persian kings. During the first century before and the first century after Christ, hordes of Scythians, having overthrown the Bactrian and Indo-Greek dynasties of Afghanistan and India, invaded northern India, and there they maintained themselves with varying fortune for five centuries longer. The Jats of India and the Rajputs have both been assigned the Scythian ancestry. The historian Madison Grant writes that ancient Bactria maintained its Nordic and Aryan aspect long after Alexander's time and did not become Mongolized and receive the sinister name of Turkestan until the 7th century A.D. He also says the Sakai were the blonde peoples who carried the Aryan language to India. A land which was so vast and was not the original home of the Israelite Scythians, but already had some inhabitants when they settled there, must of course show varying types of people. The Nordic or Aryan Israelite Scythians conquered these other races. While some writers speak of a Mongoloid type found in some parts of Scythia, ancient writers pretty well agree that the dominant Sakai or Massagetae Scythians were a Nordic people. Dr. Hans Günther, professor at Berlin University, in his Racial Elements of European History, published in the 1920s, says, "The investigations into the traces left behind them by that widespread Nordic people, the Sakai or Scythians, with its many tribes, are well worthy of attention. It had been living on the steppes of southeastern Europe and had spread as far as Turkestan and Afghanistan and even to the Indies. The ancient writers, such as Polemon of Ilium, Gallienus, Clement of Alexandria, and Adamantios, state that the Sakai were like the Celts and Germans and describe them as ruddy, fair. The Scythian tribe of the Alans are also described as having a Nordic appearance. Ammianus, who lived about AD 330 to 400, calls them almost all tall and handsome, with hair almost yellow and a fierce look." We have seen that the names of the Massagetae and Thysagetae evolved into Goths, the Ostrogoths or East Goths, and the Visigoths or West Goths. The historian Ptolemy, who died about 150 AD, mentions a Scythian people descended from the Sakai by the name of Saxons, who had come from Media. Albinus, who lived in the 1st century BC, also says, "The Saxons were descended from the ancient Sakai in Asia, and in process of time they came to be called Saxons." The historian Prideaux reports that the Kymrians came from between the Black and the Caspian Seas, and that with them came the Angli. We are now well into established European history. By the beginning of the 4th century AD, many of the Goths were already Christians. In the 4th century, there were several collisions between Visigoths and Rome, and in the year 410 AD, the Visigoths became the masters of Italy and captured Rome. Later, they moved into southern France and northern Spain, where they settled permanently. The Ostrogoths settled in what is modern Hungary, about 455 AD. Under Theodoric the Great, they conquered Italy about 493 AD and set up an Ostrogoth kingdom in Italy, which, however, was short-lived. Their descendants are the fair-skinned and blonde Italians of northern Italy, and we find some of them also in Switzerland. But the Goths had destroyed the Roman Empire. God's battle axe was again destroying the kingdoms of the Babylonian order of empires. The Angli and the Saxons moved up the Danube Valley and settled in Germany and along the Baltic shores, as is well known. And from there, the Jutes, Angles, and Saxons colonized England after the Roman legions were withdrawn in the year 408 AD. Actually, the earliest waves of migration penetrated to the farthest edges of the European continent, partly because they could move through nearly empty lands without meeting any people strong enough to effectively resist them, partly because they were being pushed farther by the later waves of Israelite migration coming behind them. Hence, we find the settlement of the Scandinavian peninsula pretty well completed before the arrival of the Jutes, Angles, and Saxons along the southern shores of the Baltic Sea. The tribes which settled along the shores of the Baltic and the Scandinavian peninsula were a great maritime people, as some of the Israelites had been, even when still in Palestine, and as God had prophesied. The Jutes, Angles, and Saxons came from within the Baltic Sea, but their ocean-borne raids on England were heavy and continuous. Later, by invitation of the British, they settled along the eastern shores in East Anglia, Mercia, Northumbria, Sussex, Wessex, Essex, and Kent. William the Conqueror invaded England in 1056 with the Normans, but these were not Latin French. They were actually Norse Vikings who had settled on the coast of France in the province of Normandy, the word Norman being really derived from Norseman. So we see that the migrations of Israel, first into Scythia, expanding there, then gaining the names of Goths, Angli, and Saxons, and under those names, moving on into their present European homelands, is a well-established historical fact. There is also the fascinating story of the early migrations by sea, but that is another subject in itself, which I will have to take up some other time.